Lately, there is an old discussion in Israel about the Haredi boys, why they don't go to the army, about this whole issue. It's become, every few years, it flares up again, and everybody's talking about it, and there is discussion and argument and fight, and fighting about it. Then the law is for 70 years. And if you're a yeshiva student, the moment you come to the age of army, you have to go to the army, show up, and you have to bring with you a letter from, not only from your yeshiva, a letter of there is an organization who is in charge of all the yeshivas and office. You bring from them a letter that they testify that you are a student in the yeshiva and you don't have any other job. It's called Torah Tomanuto, that your job, that your occupation is learning Torah.
Okay.
And you get from them the first for 1 year, that you are exempt for a year. Mm-hmm. Next year you have to come again. A year later you have to come again. Every year you have to get again a permission to be in yeshiva instead of going to the army. Now, in addition to it, you want to learn Torah in Israel. You cannot leave. From the age of 18, even a little earlier, you are the possession of the army. You cannot go anywhere without a permission outside of Israel. Until the age of 22, the army can give you permission for as much as 2 months, accumulative 2 months of days to be outside of Israel in these 4 years. And even this, you have to come, you have to give an explanation why you need to leave. And the officer there will give you a written permission that you can leave for this amount from this date to this date. And with this, you go to the airport, you have to show it in the airport. And you cannot leave without that. Then if you go for 3 weeks, then you have less 3 weeks. Then 2 months in 4 years, that's it. And the rest, you sit in yeshiva, you sit in Israel, and finished. Now, yeshiva, Chabad yeshiva student, they wanted to go to the Rebbe. They wanted to study by the Rebbe, to be by the Rebbe, that was our life. Then you want to go for the holidays? 2 times, that's it. And that's your prime life, and you're 18 and 19 and 20 and 21 and 20. And 23, they give, after 22, they give you a month a year. That's it. And they wanted very, very much to go to the Rebbe. It's not they just wanted. It's more than wanted. Then in the 50s and the 60s, it was even more strict because Israel was like Russia. It was like a jail. That was Israel. One big jail. That's what it was. Then Chamad had very good connections with the Israeli leadership, with the army, with the leaders of the government, because many of them came from Hasidic families originally. And they came from Russia, and they knew Chabad. And there was one, especially was the president of Israel, his name was Zalman Shazar. He came from a Chabad family, and he had very close relationship with the Rebbe. Then little by little, with connections, they gave permission in 1962, I think, for a group of yeshiva students to go for 3 months to be by the Rebbe. Then it became 6 months. And then the Rebbe told Shazar, I want them to come for a year, because during the year, they will learn how to celebrate every holiday by me. Like they should see the Rebbe here blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and now he dances on Simchas Torah, and now he's on Shavuos, and now he's on Pesach. You to be a chassid, you have to see the real thing.
Right.
You can't be a chassid from far away. It doesn't work. You have to be a part of it. You have to see the Rebbe. If you don't see the Rebbe, you're fake news. You're like not the real, not the real money. You're what it's called, counterfeit.
Counterfeit money.
Finally, they gave permission for God for 1 year. Then by the age of 20, the class from the yeshiva in Israel is to go to America for a year. That was the highlight of every boy in Chabad. He lived for it. Just like the graduation trip. This is 1,000 times stronger than that. You live for it. And therefore the yeshivas were holding it like this. If you don't do this, A, B, C, and D, and E, and B, and Z, we don't let you go. And when we went to New York, that was, and the army gave you permission for all year to go, and you stayed there. I'm telling you, I was also part of it. This is your life. I'm not even going to tell you what it took in my class to go. It's not important, but it was very exciting. The first few years when people came, a small group came from Israel in the 60s, 770, the yeshiva in New York was a small yeshiva. Then everybody had place in the same place to learn Torah together. Little by little, the groups grow. 770, the yeshiva grow. The Israeli group became bigger. It was not enough place in 770 for both groups. Then it was also a cultural problem. The Israelis spoke Hebrew, the Americans spoke English, even that some of the boys spoke Yiddish from both sides. But still, then there is, you know, there are different personalities, there are different cultures. It didn't work. Mm-hmm. Then the principals of the yeshiva, the deans of the yeshiva, decided you have to separate the groups. The regular boys, American boys, stay in 770. And the Israelis will come every year. We'll have a building next, not too far, a block away. Mm-hmm. You can imagine the Israeli boys did not like the idea.
Right.
In 770, we used by the Rebbe under the same roof of the Rebbe. It means you see the Rebbe walking in and walking out. Every little thing that happens, you're right there. Mm-hmm. A block away, you're a block away. You're a mile, you're a million years away. Not only the Israeli boys did not like it at all. And they didn't want to move. Mm-hmm. And you know, what are you going to do? Fight with them? What are you going to do? Beat them up? What are you going to do? Eventually, the Rebbe himself had to speak about it. In 1972, at the Purim Verbringen, the Rebbe gave many speeches. One of the speeches was about it. How the Rebbe approached it? He started to speak about, you know, jealousy in Judaism is frowned upon. I mean, it's not, jealousy is not a good thing. It's written in the Ten Commandments, do not envy your neighbor and so on. Nobody likes it. But one type of enviness is encouraged. The enviness between scholars, between is learning. Because if I am jealous of your car, I might steal it.
Right.
But if I'm jealous of your knowledge, the knowledge is available. The books are all here. By me learning more, doesn't take away from you at all. Then it's written, Kinat Sofrim Tarbe Chochma. The jealousy, the enviness of scholars will bring more knowledge. I'll learn more and I'll prove that I know better than you and you know prove that better than me. And it's good. The Rebbe started to speak about this concept. And he says, when you can create this type of competition, when you have two classes, the Rebbe said, until now it was one class. Everybody learned in one place, in one room, in one hall.
Yeah.
Now we'll divide it. We do classes. Will be a competition. Mm-hmm. Who learns more, who learns less. Then it's a good thing. But the Rebbe knew very well what the real problem is. There is something very interesting. You know, when God created the world on Sunday, it was created light, and it was one. What was created on Monday? God created the sky on Monday. What means to create the sky? He separated between the lower waters and the higher waters. Before, all the waters were one. But then there is lower and there is higher. Then the Zohar and the Midrash say something very interesting. The lower waters were crying. Mm-hmm. We also want to be in front of God, closer to God. That's what the Zohar says. This word. What means they're crying? Physically, but they're crying. If you could hear the cry, you would hear them. We also want to be closer to God. The Rebbe says, "Ma'im tachtoinim boichim." The lower waters are crying. I know. You also want to be closer. Yeah. But the Rebbe didn't speak about himself or about the boys. He spoke about
right.
That he gave the right metaphor. What the Rebbe said, he said like this, then that it's true. They also want to be in top, but the thirst to be closer to God. Mm-hmm. The enviness of those who are closer to God will motivate them to become even better. The bottom line is they had to go to the different building. And since when I came, it was already in the new other building. There was not even a discussion. I came in 1985. They were in there. That was the story in 1972. Nothing will help you. Oh, but we were plenty there, don't worry. We took care of these problems. But God is always never pays leaves owing anything to anyone. If he demoted somebody, he will pay him back. God paid back to the lower voters for being demoted. What he paid them back? It's in the parsha of this week. Parsha of this week, Vayikra. It's a new book. It's called the Book of Sacrifices. In this book, there is all the laws of sacrifices. And then there is an interesting line on chapter 2, number 13. In the book of Leviticus, chapter 2, number 13, he says a very interesting line. He gives a law. Yeah, you have it? Chapter 2, number 13. He says that on every sacrifice, you should bring salt. You're not allowed to bring any sacrifice to the altar without salt. Very strange thing. Why salt? Al kol korbancha takriv melach. It's right here.
Yep.
You see it?
Season every one of your meal offerings with salt.
Yeah. And continue.
You should not leave out the salt from being placed upon your meal offerings, because your God made a covenant during the 6 days of creation that salt would always be placed on the altar.
That's in parentheses from Rashi. Now, why salt? And Rashi says something very interesting. What is salt coming from, by the way?
The sea, typically.
From the sea, from water, basically. Then God says, I will take you the lower water. The salt is the lowest of the lowest. Mm-hmm. I will bring you up to the altar and being elevated, you bring you closer to God. Then gets written, that's what Rashi says. God made a covenant when he demoted the lower water, then when the temple will come, the salt will be offered on the altar. In this way, the salt will never be, the lower water will also be coming closer to God. That's how God paid off for the water. But the question is, this was in the time of the temple. By the way, that's why we have a tradition. And you break bread on Friday night, everybody knows. You take the first piece of bread and you dip it in the salt. Why? For this reason. Mm-hmm. Because the table is considered like an altar. That's our altar. When you eat bread, it's like we offer a sacrifice. Then the first piece, we dip in the salt. Just like in the table, by the temple, on the altar, every sacrifice came with salt. Then we break bread, that's a real meal. Then the first piece we dip in the salt and we eat it. Now we cannot do this. I mean, there is no sacrifices. Then today there is also something you can do from the waters. You wash your hands before you davening. You know, Jewish people are very obsessed with washing hands. Mm-hmm. You wash hands before we pray. When we wake up in the morning, we wash hands. When we go to the mikveh, it's all mitzvahs that being done with water. You take a cup of water and you say a blessing before it. That in this way, we elevate the lower water closer to God. Mm-hmm. Then in one way or another, for thousands of years, God is compensating the lower waters for devoting them one-time devotion. It's written, as the Baal Shem Tov said, for thousands of years, the waters are crying. The lower waters are crying. Why I'm not closer to God? And every time when I do something, a mitzvah with them, I take away a little bit of their complaint of God. You understand? Mm-hmm. I reduce the complaint. What's the lesson? I felt it's a lesson that I can take to myself even. You know, many times people do a mitzvah, and they felt they will not appreciate that God didn't pay them off, or people made fun of them. And sometimes, you know, the famous line, no good, it goes unpunished. The lesson from the water teaches us one thing. God pays back. Big time he pays back. If God was busy to compensate water that doesn't talk and doesn't feel and doesn't get embarrassed and doesn't have nothing, God was so busy to pay them off for so many generations, thousands of years. A human being that feels and talks and cares and can make a difference, how much more God will pay them off? Not only to the person, not only to his generation, but to many generations to come.